Hey, it's Spike. The Ricky is off until later this week for the All-Star break, giving us a breather from each other, a breather from the Sixers, a breather from me and Mike, every breather you need. But we wanted to post some old episodes for some of the people who are new, or even if you've been with us the whole time, if you don't remember this one. So the old episode that we're going to post today, I actually haven't even listened to. It is when Sam Hinkie made the trade with the Sacramento Kings. We got the pick swaps, the first round pick, and Nick Stauskas essentially for nothing. I think when you look back at it, this is probably value-wise Sam Hinkie's greatest trade. So I have not listened to this. I'm sure the mic quality is worse. I'm sure our takes are horrible. The only sponsor, if there is a sponsor, is LL in this one. So you can, it's fun to hear the takes. It's fun to hear our reaction and also how much the podcast has changed. As well, two quick things before we get going. April 11th, 2020, we need you to save the date. The information will be coming out this week, but the people that get the information first and the people that get access first will be the people who are newsletter subscribers. So go to writestorickysanchez.com/newsletter. And two new things on the site, one from Andrew Unterberger in If Not, Pick Will Convey as Two Second Rounders about why the Sixers are so bad on the road. And brand new on Saturday morning from Sixers Adam in Normal Column. Sixers Adam, by the way, his real name, 8 things to look out for and to keep in mind after the All-Star break as the Sixers hit the home stretch. We will be back at the end of this week. I think the 20th, right after the Nets game, is when we'll be back, unless big news breaks, somebody gets hurt, whatever. Like, fingers crossed that doesn't happen. Otherwise, we will see you then. But remember, the news about April 11th will come out before we are back. So make sure you subscribe to the newsletter. writestorickysanchez.com/newsletter. Without any further ado, the old pod. Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I am Spike Etzkin, along with Mr. Mike Levin, the King of Los Angeles, star of the new True Detective series. Very good to have you, Mike.
Thanks. Glad I could make the time.
Yeah. I'm glad you could make the time as well.
Yeah.
This is our first podcast since draft night, right? And things have changed quite
a
bit.
It feels like a lot of things have happened.
Yeah, it feels like a really long time ago. How long was it? It was a week. That's all it was. It was normal amount of time, right? It was officially last Friday. All right, so before we get anything, can I put in a small like charity plug thing? I've done it before, but I can do it again. So this is actually a pretty good cause. It really has nothing to do with me either. Whatever. So when Val and I went on our honeymoon, I don't know if I've mentioned this before. Val and I went on our honeymoon in Aruba, there are like a million stray dogs in Aruba. They do not think about dogs the way that we think about dogs here. Even the people that have dogs, like if your dog runs away, you're like, whatever. It's sort of like I have a cat and I love my cat, but it's sort of like cats. Like if you go in South Philly, there's a million stray cats. They're like, they're all over the place. So that's what it's like in Aruba. And what they do to control this problem is they basically just round them up every day and kill them. Shoot them, they kill them. Yeah, it's terrible. So we found out there's a charity called ARF Aruba that basically, if you want to adopt a dog from Aruba, they will cover the cost of like putting the dog on the plane, finding a volunteer to fly him back. Like, it's a crazy, crazy, like, great charity. They're actually – so we're adopting a dog from Aruba, and they're basically – they have a volunteer flying him from Aruba to Miami, and then somebody from Pennsylvania flying to Miami to get the dog to bring him back here. And this all costs me nothing. I think the adoption fee is like $200, which is the same if you adopt a dog like – in Philadelphia or whatever, like with all the work they do. So they have a spay and neuter campaign that they're starting. They've raised like $20,000 so far, where they're just going to go to Aruba and spay and neuter as many dogs as they can to try to control the population so they don't just like keep killing them, I guess. So I'm putting the link in the post on spikeeskin.com for you to, if you can donate $10, if you can donate $5, if you can donate $1, there's even like, I don't know if you can handle this, but there's a pretty horrible video of them like rounding up the dogs. It's really sad because Aruba is a really nice island. Everybody's super nice, but the problem is pretty out of control. So if you have it in your heart, or there's even a link there, you can adopt a dog if you want to adopt a dog from there. Again, it doesn't cost you any more money than if you were to get one out of a shelter here, and you're helping control the problem there. So that's my public service announcement. That's all I got on that.
Did you want to hear? Okay, so I've been seeing you tweet about that stuff, but I haven't really read all of it. So I just saw you help save my dog from Aruba. And so the story that I constructed in my head of like what had happened was a lot different than what was actually. It involved you and Val taking a vacation to Aruba with your dog,
Yep, end up getting
leaving
stuck
the
there.
dog there at the airport like by accident in like some like Home Alone 2-esque thing.
Yep.
And you not being able to go get it, so like you need somebody to, and they're like, there's a hostage situation involved. It was really like a
Yeah.
fun story. I like mine better, actually.
Yeah, you're actually not the only person to have constructed a similar sort of story in your head, like that our dog got arrested for like running drugs and now he's being detained in Aruba, I've heard. So, yeah, I've said our dog because it is, I guess, our dog. So anyway, he'll be here next Tuesday. I just couldn't believe the lengths. Like, there's this one woman, Marie, that we've dealt with, and there's this other woman, Renee, that is going down to Miami to get the dog. The lengths that these people go through to save these dogs is pretty incredible. So, anything you can do to help out the campaign, it's all right there on the spikeeskin.com link on this podcast post. So we have a lot to talk about in the fact that, like, aside from what has happened over the last 36 hours. We really haven't even spoken since draft night, you know? So I think we should probably do the more pressing, more recent issues first, and then maybe reflect on how we felt draft night compared to how we feel now
That feels
about
right. That feels
Oprah
right.
and the draft and all that kind of stuff. And I believe in this last week, we've been taught a lesson about the whole by the way, this podcast invented trust the process, and I want you to
Yeah,
know. I
that's
want
that, I was gonna ask you that. I was like, that was us, right? We decided that that was the thing.
100% when we were talking about the T-shirt and we were talking about trust the process. You were like, "That's a little culty," but yes, absolutely, we should definitely do it. We put
Yes.
trust the process on the T-shirt. We so just for just so everyone is clear, we created 1611.
Yeah,
Just so you know.
that was very you. You were
Well.
very 1611.
Whatever, this everything that comes from this podcast comes from this podcast. And trust the process, it went national when the T-shirt went on TV during the draft and
And
went
around the horn with Pablo.
with Pablo. And now everybody, it's they were discussing on His and Hers, they were discussing on Around the Horn again, trust the process. Like, and now people are just using trust the process as if the Sixers had to put this out there, like as if everyone knows this. So I just not I don't want to toot our own horn, but here's us tooting our own horn.
But toot toot.
Yeah, we invented trust the process. We invented trust the process. So
We should be
anyway,
getting royalties, I think. That's
as
true.
if for all the money being made off of trust the process,
There's
absolutely.
got to be plenty, yeah.
Yeah. So all right. So I think this week has taught us a lot about trust the process. And even though we were both in on the night of the draft, you
Yeah.
know, if anyone listened to that podcast, you could certainly hear, you know.
There was elements of despair, for sure.
Sure, yeah. So here we are. Okay. So this friggin' trade, right? So I went to bed
Yeah.
and I woke up around 5, and my process is this, is get up, and then while I'm peeing, open Twitter and look to see what happened. And
That's a long pee for
yeah, well,
for all the stuff that happened.
that it lasted longer than the pee, Mike, is
Oh
what I'm
wow,
about to explain.
that's a big morning.
Well, because I opened it up and I had 117 mentions from when I had gone to sleep. And that is not a normal thing, right? So I was like, oh no. And then the worst thing about Twitter is that if you miss something, trying to catch up is
Yeah.
like is
But
crazy.
you just gotta scroll as far down as you can go, because I don't want to miss anything either. I think that on days like the draft and free agency, you really gotta like catch everything. And
Yeah.
Twitter never sleeps. I'm sure
No.
that Val doesn't really love it. My girlfriend doesn't really love it. Where I'm just like, how can you be on Twitter for so long? What's happening? What are you even looking at?
Everything's happening.
Everything's happening. You don't go to bed. And but yeah, so I was at a dinner, like a business industry dinner with another guy, and doing like the networking deal, and I just see my phone out of the corner of my eye like light up a million times, and I'm like, oh, there's probably some like bullshit like email chain going around just about theoretical stuff. It never crossed my mind that like shit was going down, which when you get Nick Stauskas, that's absolutely shit going down.
Yeah.
And so I read it afterwards and just raced home to try to like catch up on everything. And man, that's a great, there's no two ways about it that this is the great trade. The only people that are saying like, well, it's not that great are people that are saying like the Sixers are taking on $30 million in salary over 2 years to acquire Stauskas, a first round pick, and the right to swap picks in the next 2 years. And so people are like, well, that's a lot of money. But it's like the Sixers, A, it's not your money, person that's saying that, so don't worry about it. And B, the Sixers are flush with cap space. It's over 2 years, and the cap's going up anyway. And furthermore, they can easily, over the course of this season, going into next season, flip Jason Thompson and Carl Landry to a contender, to a team that needs power. We may flip them back to Sacramento because they're the best guys that they can get.
Yeah, like those the draft. We may flip them back for a draft and stash if we
need them. Exactly.
And the whole point of having this cap space is having, you know, Hinkie said, I think around the trade deadline or whatever, where he's talking about optionality, that's what having this space is there for now. It will be when we have it later, that's when it will be there to acquire superstar. But now it is there to do this. And that's the amazing thing about the two guys they acquired is that they are not JaVale McGee. These are two useful players for someone. Carl Landry is a useful player. Jason Thompson is a useful player for someone. You know, like they can be, I don't even think final, maybe second big off the bench or first big off the bench for a legitimate team. I think both guys could be, you know.
You know. They've had to do too much, especially Jason in Sacramento. He's been there for his whole career. Yep. He's the longest tenured king. Like he was there forever.
And he's from Philadelphia, by the way.
Yeah. Went to Ryder, played basketball with his brother Ryan Thompson. I remember that very well. Not a bad player. He's big. He has a semblance of an offensive game. He's like a very poor man's LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't know. I think it's – I mean, I don't know that I want both of those guys coming into the year on the team. I think one of them should be and be this year's Luke Richard and Bamute, but – I definitely think that both guys are flippable and will be useful in helping the young guys and just sort of stabilizing the offense the way that Luke did for some time.
Yeah, Carl Landry's sort of an older fad a little bit, I guess. I mean, they are bodies. They're legitimate NBA body guys. And I'll tell you, as front court guys, here is what, if they do end up on the team, here's what I like about them. I like them as guys that Brown, like Bamute at some point was sort of like the guy that Brown could go to when he wasn't happy with Covington. Like, you know what I mean? So you have two, depending on Embiid's health, two or three front court guys that are young that may need sitting at some point, you know, and those guys, Thompson and Landry, are guys that, if from all I can see, are legitimate, like, work hard guys that you can use as a threat for
the young guys. For playing time, development, all that stuff. Yeah. You want to be able to go to those guys. You don't want to have to always be like, all right, Jakar, get on in there.
Yeah. So it's funny. You know, the other thing that people use as a negative for this is like, you know, Nick Stauskas isn't that good. But who knows if Nick Stauskas is good?
Yeah, that's the thing. Is we – I had him like – he went eighth, which was high for him. For sure high for him because
but a few,
Sacramento.
A couple Sacramento. Spots high. Yeah,
yeah, I had him last year. I checked because I always like to reflect on how dumb I was the year before. I had him 12th on my board, which I think is fine, which I think is like a reasonable thing. Here's the thing is that Hinkie's always said, and I wrote about it a little bit, is that if you think that if you think what's going to happen actually happens, which I wrote about it, and it's like the Tony Roten thing where he went to Memphis and didn't get playing time and didn't improve because they just didn't have time to give him minutes. And you think that that's going to happen, and it does, then you're like, okay, well, yeah, your expectations came true, and you shouldn't – if you like Tony Roten coming into the draft, then that shouldn't change your opinion of him. And the Sixers acquired him for nothing and then played him and saw that he's an NBA player, at least can do things on an NBA court. And that's the same way I think about Stauskas, is that he went to a bad situation in Sacramento and had to go through three coaches. There was total turmoil from the get-go, and played behind their last lottery pick, who was also a shooting guard. It just was not a good situation for him. So, no, did he play well? No, of course not. He had a decent second half of the year, shot the ball better, but really struggled on defense, really didn't look like comfortable at any point. But that doesn't change who he was coming out of college, and now that he's in a situation where he'll be able to get that development, get the minutes, thrive, and have like a specific role, I think that he can be a very solid NBA player. Is he a stud? I probably don't think so, but he's really versatile on offense and has the potential to be an average defensive player because of how hard he works.
And he's physically, you know, he has an NBA body, I think.
Oh yeah, for sure. Know?
And he is not a mega athlete, but he's a pretty good athlete, I think.
He's an above average athlete.
Yeah,
for sure.
and he is tall. Like on some level, he is like watered down. He is almost Hazonia size, right? I mean, he is 6'6.5". You know, I think Jason Thompson, we had Jason Thompson on yesterday who said he was legitimate. We had him on WIP who said he's legitimately 6'7". That's what Thompson said.
Are you using this trade to retroactively feel like you got Mario Hezonja?
I might be doing that.
And, all right, cool.
You know, I was talking to Ike yesterday. And Ike knows, Ike always laughs that I hate American-born white players. Like,
yeah, you do.
The only one I like is Redick. Stauskas is Canadian born. So
yeah,
so we're all good. We're all good. I think Stauskas, I think here is like the wrap it all up in a bow thing. And first of all, we haven't even discussed and I know it's far away, but that first round pick, all of a sudden one year, you're going to be like, oh my God, we have an extra first round pick when, you know, our pick is 24th. We end up with Sacramento who ends up as 13th, you know, one year, whether it's 2018 or 2019. And yes, these rights to flip in 2016 and 2017 are basically like, hey, if they happen to win the lottery, that's awesome. Or if we happen to be better quicker than we think we are, here's the thing about Sacramento. They are in the West. So even if they're better, they're not getting it. I don't think they're making the playoffs in any fashion.
And so, people are saying like, well, they're going to be okay. They're in like total shambles. And that's nothing against DeMarcus Cousins, who seems like a mess to coach and build around. But he's certainly one of the top 15 to 20 players in the league for sure.
Yeah, but
keep going.
Well, Oklahoma City, they had Durant for half the season and Westbrook for three quarters of the season and did not make the playoffs last year.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like, and they both had a better, you know, culture's the wrong word, but a better background and setup and did not make the playoffs last year. You know, like the Pelicans, the Kings are not making the playoffs. So do I want to take a
chance? There's no chance. Yeah.
I'll take the chance that they win the lottery and we can just take it. That's awesome.
Even if you think that next year, which is probably the case, next year the Kings will probably be better than the Sixers, they could still jump. The Cavs jumped from 9 2 years ago. So if they jump in the lottery, then their pick stays top 10, because if they're picked outside the top 10, it goes to Chicago. So basically the way it goes is if in the next 2 years, the pick would go to Chicago if it's outside the top 10.
And the reality is, if it's outside the top 10, we're probably not flipping with them anyway.
Exactly. So the next 2 years, if it in the next 2 years does not go to Chicago, if they're top 10 both years, then it becomes 2 second-round picks, and we get the first-round pick in 2018, also top 10 protected.
Yeah, I and so to wrap it up in a nice little bow here is, and to take it back to what we started talking about, is that the night of the draft, we were none of these things, and one of the critiques is like, well, this isn't a sure thing, or that's not a sure thing. Well, you know what? The Miami Heat have Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Goran Dragic, and Justice Winslow, and they are not a sure thing. They didn't even make the playoffs last year. So there are a lot of unsure things in the NBA. Everything's an unsure thing except for LeBron James.
Really. I mean, it's a straw argument. There's people are like, well, we don't know when that's going to convey. And it's like, well, you don't know if like his knee's going to hold up. Like things happen. You don't know. Like, you got to be okay with the idea of, like, you put feelers out. You get as many possible scenarios where things can work out for you, like a pick swap, like a future pick that could convey. And then you see what happens. And you keep drafting, like, international guys so you can trade them. Like, if we had drafted two second-round picks like Michael Frazier and Christian Wood or whatever, we couldn't have done this trade with the Kings. It had to be two stashed guys so they wouldn't impact the salary cap at all. Yeah, we wouldn't have to pay them.
So what it comes back to for me is that the night of the draft, we were like, well, why didn't he take these things and move up into the first round like we wanted him to get Jaren Grant or to get this guy or to get that guy? And instead, what he did is he took two second-round picks and got a first-round pick, two pick swaps, a top 10 pick from last year, and Carl Landry and Jason Thompson. So instead of taking the two first-round picks to get Grant or two second-round picks to get Grant or something, he got – look at how much more. It's unbelievable. Yeah. It's really – you know, you sort of wish that there was a recording of the conversation between Sam Hinkie
and – Oh, I would kill to see this. I would so die.
Because isn't there a point where Hinkie, like, pretty much has the deal he wants, covers up the phone and whispers to somebody, let's see if we can get more, and goes, I don't know, how about a pick swap in 2016?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. He's like, you guys probably think you're going to be better than us anyway. May as well do it.
Yeah, and then he says yes, and then he goes, you know what? And he covers up the phone. Watch this. How about a pick swap in 2016? And all I can think is, after looking at the fact that we ended up with T-Rob and we ended up with Stauskas, you know I liked Willie Cauley-Stein. Next 2 years, we're going to have Willie Cauley-Stein at some point, right? I mean, he's going to end up on the Sixers somehow.
That's the best. That's my favorite bit on Twitter, is that just assuming everyone's going to be
on the Sixers.
Sixers eventually, yeah.
Yeah, future Sixer. I actually thought he signed somewhere. I forget where he signed. I actually thought Shane Larkin at some point was a future Sixer. I don't know why I thought he was, but I always thought Larkin was a future Sixer. So the trade is great. It's a bummer that Stauskas won't be able to play summer league because they won't be able to finalize the trade until next week. There is some concern amongst Sixers Twitter that since this isn't official, that the Kings, if they aren't able to sign somebody, will be able to back out. I guess the Kings could also decide to move their team to Mars. You know, I don't think that it's something that is – I guess it's possible, but it doesn't seem realistic to me that they back out. You know, it just doesn't seem like a possible thing to me.
I really hope not.
Yeah.
It seems like that would break all of the rules.
Yeah. Yeah, it just doesn't seem like – and somebody – I forget who it was. Somebody was like, well, the NBA vetoed the Chris Paul trade, but – if you remember, the NBA was running the Pelicans at the time. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's a very different situation.
This is already 2 days later.
Yes.
Which that was, I think, like within hours, right? That wasn't like...
I think it was that night or something like that.
I don't remember. I'm just looking at the West right now. You got to figure that, okay, 8 teams made the playoffs last year. You could assume that maybe Portland and Dallas don't.
Maybe.
I think everybody. Yeah. I think maybe. I think they'll at least be there. Golden State's there. Houston's there. Clippers are there.
Yep.
San Antonio and New Orleans are there, I would say.
Uh-huh.
Oklahoma City, I think, would be in.
Yep.
I think Phoenix could be in.
Right. I mean, they were right there. They were there until the end last year.
Yeah. And I would say almost definitely Utah's going to be right there trying to get in the playoffs. So all of those teams, that's 12 teams that I would say are, 13. 13 teams better than Denver, or sorry, than Sacramento right now. Like, I don't think that there's a shot that they make the playoffs or sniff the playoffs even. Even if everything works out. Even if they get the best, because they didn't get Wesley Matthews. They didn't get Monte Ellis. They're not getting Aldridge, obviously. So
they're going to get Rondo. They're going to get Rondo.
Then what?
Get Rondo.
That adds more chaos to a team that has no stability and no leadership and just, like, really no direction. You know, they need to put butts in the seats. That's the most unfortunate thing about a lot of teams, especially small market ones, is that, like, they're not thinking about, okay, we got to win a championship. They're like, we got to get fans to show up, otherwise we're going to, like, move. It's about, like, that's what Charlotte is doing, where it's like, people need to show up. We have to, like, start to win a couple games. Like, it's just a different thing. It just makes me feel sad because you can't view it on the sense of, like, well, what are you building towards? Well, we're building towards trying to stay in the city, which is just, like, a bummer. But yeah, I don't think Sacramento has a shot. I think they'll probably be better than Denver and probably the Lakers and maybe Minnesota. I don't know. But I think there's a definite chance that they're in the bottom three teams in the West, which they were last year. And so, like, if they win, like, 29 games again, then the Sixers have a really good shot of A, swapping picks, or B, swapping picks if they jump into the lottery.
And here's another thing. If they make the playoffs, who cares? You know what I mean? They make the playoffs, then they give Chicago the first-round pick, and that means that we get their first-round pick sooner.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like all of these things, you take all of them and you hope some of them work out, and, you know, and they're all sitting there and you hope some of them work out. It was high robbery.
You can't say anything bad about it for the Sixers. You can say, like, guys, it's not going to be that big of a deal. If you don't like Stauskas, sure. If you think that their first round pick is going to convey in a couple years and not be that good, then sure. But, like, it's still, like, a couple things, and the Sixers got this for 2 second round picks that might never come to America, and the fact that they have some cap space and weren't pursuing free agents with that cap space.
Can I tell you something funny? I said at work yesterday, I was laughing, and I said, it's good this happened now, because I was about 48 hours from talking myself into Arturas Gurudaitis.
Yeah, I was watching some clips, and I'm so glad I don't have to do that anymore. I was like, I don't know, is this going to be good? Is he fun? He seems like a tough kid. Good for him. I hope he has a nice career.
Well, the Okafor thing proves, like,
we can do it. We can really do anything.
Yeah, I am such a fraud. I mean, I said that the one thing I did not want to happen with this draft was Okafor. And I would say within 36 hours of the draft, I was like, you know, he has the most NBA-ready skill in the whole draft.
Yeah,
and I'm already defending the jersey drop on Twitter, and
I stayed out of that one.
I think I was silly about it.
You gotta be. Let's wait one last wrap up on the Stauskas pick situation.
Yeah,
the best case scenario is that the Kings continue to suck for 2 years,
win the lottery both years.
Well, yeah, jump into the top three, and we swap their picks. I think it will be a disaster, and the Sixers will be better than them at least one of those years. Probably not this year, probably next year. And the pick swap will be worth it, and it'll work out great. And then in 2018, we just get their pick because the pick they owe to Chicago becomes 2 second rounders.
Yep.
So we will get their pick in, I believe, 2018, top 10 protected. And hopefully then they make a run, we can get it as around like 13. That'd be nice. And it's just going to continue to stockpile assets and continue to stockpile the idea of just having the ability to move up. And it's not that they're going to make all of these picks that they keep getting. That hasn't been the case. But when they want to package them together and really move up and get the guy that they think is the guy, maybe that's next year that they start doing that, then they'll be able to. And I don't know. I didn't listen to your dad on the radio yesterday, and I probably suggest that no one should listen and take it seriously. But I can't imagine how people are like continuously saying like, oh, well, they're just doing nothing. The plan is failing. Like, how could this is the opposite of failing? Like, I don't understand anything at this point. It's just like you're just pushing your own agenda and not really basing anything in actual opinion so much as I have to say this to save face of everything I've been saying.
No, I first of all, on the radio yesterday, Josh does a thing where he says before the break, he says, I am going to troll people next segment. He's done it for the year that he's been here. Like the first time he did it, I remember he said, I am going to troll people next segment. And then he said he did an entire half hour on Chase Utley being overrated. And people were calling in furious. And in between every phone call, he'll go, all right, here we go, trolling right along. And of course, like the people that aren't calling are getting it. So yeah. What was perfect yesterday is that he started. I didn't even hear it. I was in a meeting. I wasn't even in the office. He started doing it, and then luckily my dad was there. So then, like, my dad is a perfect, like, I don't even want to ruin the bit. And I look. I don't think he's into the hinky thing at all. You know, I think it's based in reality, but at a certain point, it just like, it becomes show business. And I don't understand, like, it's funny. I you know what I mean? Like, and the people getting fired up over, it's like the Deadspin is doing the same thing. And they are, every time you click on the article, they are laughing at you. They're laughing.
So would you say the same about like John Smallwood and like Bob Ford, like the same general deal that when they're writing about this kind of stuff, they're like, they actually believe it. They don't actually believe it. Like there's actual, like,
I don't want to put, I don't want to put everyone in the same bucket. Right. So sure. I think there's a difference between sports talk radio and Deadspin. I would actually put them in the same universe, but I would not put columnists in the same universe, really, and writers. And I have not spoken to Smallwood. The last conversation I had with Smallwood about the Sixers was like 4 years ago when I was talking about them maybe signing Dwight Howard, I think.
But your boy Jody Mack does think that what they're doing is wrong and that go ahead.
I think there's I'm done. I don't want to I think Dick Girardi is being serious when he says it. I get the sense that he is being serious. Jody, I don't know. All I know is, all I can address is yesterday on the air. And I think the major problem that some people have with this whole thing is not really that it isn't the best plan. It's that they hate how absurd the – because really, here's the thing about sports radio is that, like, if you hate what they're doing, if you hate the fact that they basically put a D-League roster on the court, you can't get on the air and say the NBA is set up for this. Let's change the NBA. Because no one reacts to that, especially in Philadelphia. People only care about Philadelphia. So the only way to react to it, to get people to react to it really, is say that I do not enjoy this. I think this is bullshit. And as we've talked about before, I think there is an argument to be made that, you know, this is a – that not that is so hard to win a championship that – not putting a competitive team on the court or even trying to is a disservice to people who want to watch pro basketball in this town, who maybe think, like, you know what, we're never going to win a championship unless we get extraordinarily lucky. I don't care. Put a 45 win on the court on the team. I want to see people play basketball correctly. And that's fine. You know, that's the argument to be made, but that's sort of like a – there's no other side to that argument, really. You know, it's just sort of so.
I agree.
Do you want to talk about Okafor or the rest of free agency?
Let's talk about Okafor, and then we can get to the rest of it. I think, I don't know if you saw it, but I tweeted I had a like actual source, like a source thing. Did you see that one?
No.
What's you didn't see it? Well, because I have like a few vague sources associated with the organization, as do you. And I think you probably just use them as background more than actually going with them. And I felt that I wanted to go with this one. But it had been a while since I did anything like that. And I think people just assumed I was full of shit, which was fun. Or like, oh, this is a weird joke that I'm not getting, like that sort of thing. But I really heard from the Sixers that that they're absolutely like couldn't be any more stoked to have Okafor. He's a stud. They would put Embiid in the same boat if he's healthy. And that the way that it was delivered to me was Nerlens is clearly the third on the third level of those guys. And
yeah, that seems fair, though.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean that they don't think highly of them.
For sure, but yeah. I think that if like people are, we were talking before about who's the most likely to get traded, who is the most value, where does this go from here? And I think that because A, Nerlens expires in 2 years, and B, he doesn't seem to be as people aren't as infatuated with him in the organization as the prospect of a stud post player. Or a two-way player like Embiid if he's healthy, then I think that I would still expect that there's a good chance that Nerlens gets traded during the season this year.
Well, I think, but here is the caveat to that.
Yeah.
The caveat to that is Joel Embiid being healthy.
Sure.
Playing. Like, because if he doesn't play, I would get the sense that would be much less likely. I think all of this is predicated on Joel Embiid playing.
Yeah, and I'm not saying they need to trade any one of them. I think that there's almost an argument to be made where all guys are made more beneficial to the team if they only play 25, 30 minutes a night.
Yeah.
Especially Joel if we're trying to monitor his health once he gets there. So I don't think that they're like, well, you have three, but it's like, well, they'll still play. I don't think you need to trade him. But I think that if someone comes to you this year with a big offer for Nerlens, but in light of having to pay him at that point in like a year and a half, I wouldn't be totally shocked if he's traded.
So for me, yeah, I agree with you. But I don't think, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah, for sure.
I think... Because I don't even know what it would be. Because immediately when you start talking about that, it becomes like, well, I don't want to trade him for picks, or you know what I mean.
Sure,
like
sure.
I don't. So I agree with you. But I would be surprised and I do think there is an argument, especially this year, for even if Embiid is healthy, for keeping all three, and then like just watching to see how they all fit together, who fits with whom the best. You know what I mean? Like if Embiid breaks down, if Nerlens' jumper somehow takes a leap earlier, who knows? But I think skills overall, I think you would have to put Nerlens third. Because I think, honestly, you can make up, even though individual defense is great, you can make up for... Team defense is more important than individual defense. So I think you can make up for what you lose in Nerlens probably better than you can, because both, here's the thing, is that both Okafor and Embiid are enormous human beings.
Yeah.
And there's something to be said for having two enormous human beings, even if one of them is thought to be a minus defender, at least he's enormous, you know? I think
you can fudge Okafor's defense more than you can fudge Nerlens' post game.
For sure. I think here's where I ended up on Okafor, because I was clearly anti-Okafor leading up to it. And I think Seamus Clancy on Liberty Ballers wrote something about this, because I think he was anti-Okafor at one point, I think it was him who wrote this, is that like what you do leading up to the draft. And it was funny, I was talking to friend of the podcast and Grantland's Andy Greenwald, who had his beautiful golden heart stuck on D'Angelo Russell. He was like, for weeks, he was like, Spike, all I want is D'Angelo Russell. All I want is D'Angelo Russell. And I think what it comes down to is this, is that like we all decide who we like before the draft and then blow up the negatives of the guys that we don't like. So if you don't like Hezonja, it's like, well, this guy is never going to get to the rim and his teammates are going to hate him, right? When the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. You know, if you don't like Russell, it's like, well, how's he going to guard anybody, right? And then the guys that you do like, you sort of hide those things. And yeah. What happened with me, with Okafor, at least now, is that, like, first of all, wings and guards are more fun than front court players to me.
Absolutely.
It's not even like I would much rather watch a great wing than a great, you know, guy in the post, or unless he's Akeem Olajuwon. And then the other thing, and then on top of that, there was like, okay, well, we already have two big guys, which is like at least a subconscious thing. You know, even if we keep going best player available, you're like, well, we already have those good players. And,
yeah.
And then the other thing is that, like, you know, I ended up blowing up the, like, look, Sheila Okafor is not fat. He's not. You know, he's not like a he's not a supreme athlete. Like,
here's the thing is if I was running the board, I would have queued up a clip of you saying he's fat.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Right after you saying he's not fat.
Right. But like I said this at the beginning of this, but I am admitting the ridiculousness and the hypocrisy of everything I'm doing here. I understand that. I get it. But having looked back on it, you know, it just, like, you know, I think honestly, even when we took Michael Carter Williams, I think all of us were like, meh. You know what I mean? Like, there were moments when we were like, meh. You know, he wasn't a guy that I don't think you or me or Derek or anyone going into the draft was particularly high on. And then, you know, then he's on your team and you have to deal with the reality of it. And you take the pluses and you blow them up and you sort of, you know, bury the minuses a little bit. If you want to have fun, if you don't want to be, I don't want to be miserable. So I hope Jahlil Okafor is awesome. You know, so.
Yeah, and I think it'll be fun. And I think that watching him and Nerlens next to each other, they really benefit. They will really benefit from each other in that.
Definitely.
Jahlil won't have to be that big shot blocker and get beat every time because there's nobody behind him to protect the rim. And Nerlens won't have to pound inside with guys that are bigger than him, and he'll take a beating too early in his career. I think Nerlens will get to a point where his body is ready for that, but when he played center around half the year last year and had to bang with those guys, it just seemed like he was getting pushed around.
Yeah. He was getting pushed around. Yeah. Yeah, that was when they were starting Furkan at
Hank Sims, Lickface.
Oh, right. But didn't they, I felt like they did Furkan at the end of the year. No, Hank Sims like barely played the second half of the year.
No, I meant the first half Hank Sims was starting.
Oh, right. I'm talking about second half when they put, I felt like they played Nerlens with Furkan and put Furkan at power forward and Nerlens at center.
There's some of that. Yeah,
I'm remembering
for sure.
That? I thought that's what we were doing. Anyway, so, free agency in general.
There's a ton of stuff that we could spend all offseason on. It's been pretty crazy. I think it's tough because it's tough to judge deals because the cap is going to rise so much. So your framework of what is reasonable or crazy has sort of gone away, and almost none of the deals are bad. Like, it just, under that logic, everyone's sort of like, I think this is fine. It seems like the ones I have issue with are the longer ones. Like Paul Pierce for 3 years is weird,
yeah,
but like super cheap, and there's an opt out. I think there's a team option after the second year. So like, that's not that bad. Tyson Chandler for 4 years seems long.
Very long. Because I'll tell you, visually, he has suffered. I don't know about the metrics on it, but to my eye, he is not the same guy he was 2 or 3 years ago. Like, not even close.
Yeah.
So that is, I do think he fits in well there. I do think it's a nice spot for him. Really, I think it's a fun fit. But four years seems like he'll
be the dad there. Like, yeah, they needed a dad, and like, he'll be dad.
Yeah. And even like on court fit, it seems like, I don't know, running pick and rolls with him and that backcourt seems like it'll be fun. Like, I think that's a fun, like, little.
And they locked up Brandon Knight, and I still don't know what Phoenix is doing. Phoenix is a little bit like maybe like one level up on the Celtics in terms of they at least have some players that I would say are good, whereas the Celtics have a bunch of players that are just like, all right, like, that's fine. You have this person. But the Phoenix has, like, Brandon Knight, I think, is a good basketball player. I think that they have a bunch of prospects that could be good. But there's still, like, no superstar in sight. If you believe in Eric Bledsoe as, like, that kind of guy, I don't.
And there's been a lot of Sixers-y talk about, well, maybe we should trade for Eric Bledsoe. First of all, I don't think the Suns want to trade Eric Bledsoe. And right. The second thing is, like, he is fun to watch, but what exactly is Eric Bledsoe good at? You know, he's not a very good three-point shooter. He's a pretty good ball handler. He's just like a really good athlete, and I think fun to watch. But I think he's probably overrated, Eric Bledsoe.
He's kind of like a smaller Tyreek Evans, like in some respects. I don't know what they're doing. I think they might fight for the 8 seed again. Like they believe in Alex Len a lot, and now they're signing Tyson Chandler to 4 years. So it's like, I'm not really sure. I think their plan is just like, hey, we're just going to load up on good basketball players and something good will happen from that. And it's like, that's cool. But like, I don't know. I'd rather have a more clear avenue towards like getting actually good, not like 42 wins good. They're like a fun verse. They're like the Sixers of Doug Collins era was like the similar, like we're going to like just get a bunch of guys that could kind of play and do that. And the Suns are the far more fun version of that. But they're still like the same end game, which is like scrape into the playoffs, and unless like somebody really wants a package of like okay players.
Well, the thing that happened for them that was actually unfortunate, which is the argument for making sure that you're doing, not making sure that you lose, but making sure that you're really like playing lottery ticket with your roster spots, is they got good a year too quick. And they, 2 years ago, that you know, they were the surprise of the NBA, and everybody was like, they're up and coming. But then all of a sudden, you look and you're like, well, what's here? And free agents talk to them, but ultimately nobody chooses to go there.
Right.
And then the other, it's funny, you brought up Boston. I tweeted about this. I was listening to Chad. I like Ryan Russillo, actually. I listened to a podcast with Chad Ford and Ryan Russillo after the draft. And Chad Ford, I think it's because he doesn't get information from the Sixers, has really turned on the Sixers.
Great.
But he said
he'll change it in 5 years that he's always loved the Sixers.
Yes, yes. He made a case about Boston. He goes, he talked for Boston about Danny Ainge about how brilliant Danny Ainge is for about 3 minutes, and he basically made the case that Danny Ainge is too good at his job for his own good, and that nobody wants to make trades with him because they're scared of getting the bad end of it, and that his hiring Brad Stevens is too good a coach, and that they cannot get a good draft pick because the coach is too good, and no one wants to make deals with the GM. And I think it's hilarious. It's hilarious to make up for the fact that this guy, everyone was singing the praises of what they have, and all they have is a bunch of like pretty good, a couple of pretty good young players, and then a bunch of picks that everyone is sure will end up in the middle of the first round. Like those Brooklyn swaps and the Brooklyn picks, it's like Brooklyn has now they have no desire to get worse. Like they might as well win 38 or 40 games and make the playoffs because they don't benefit from losing. So they have Boston. Everyone talks about these offers they can make. Everyone is in the business of getting superstars, not 16th pick in the draft. They're stuck. What are they gonna do? What are they gonna do? They just signed Amir Johnson. What are they gonna do?
Who's like another fine player? Like there's a bunch of guys like. It's just, I like Jonas Jerebko. Like, that's fine. Like, good for you guys. But, like, to what end is really what it boils down to. And I think that they have the right idea in we're going to flip these guys for a package around a superstar in the same way that they used, you know, Gerald Green and Al Jefferson back in the day to get Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. But that's not the case anymore. Those guys were top-level high upside picks, and these are like in the mid. That's why they couldn't get Frank Kaminsky. They didn't want Kaminsky, but that's why they couldn't trade up to 9 and get Justice Winslow, because Charlotte was like, we don't want any of that crap. If I was Charlotte, I certainly would have taken that deal, because you just drafted Frank Kaminsky.
Yeah.
You could have gotten a bunch of other players and done, Charlotte could have actually done some stuff with that, but no.
Yeah, it's
not going to end up working out for them in a way that it's going to take as long for them to luck into a superstar as it is for the Sixers to evaluate one at the top of the draft. Like, that's my issue, is that, like, everyone praises Houston for not having been bad ever, because Daryl stayed in the middle and stayed in the middle and stayed in the middle. But, like, it took forever for the Dwight Howard and James Harden situations to materialize.
Well, and let's be honest, like, the reason they didn't, Josh actually lived in Houston and talked to Morey a lot when he was down there, interviewed him a lot. And he said the reason they didn't tank is because they weren't allowed to. Like management said, you will not tank. So they did that out of necessity, that was not a decision that they made.
Right.
And yeah, I don't want to say, I think it's bad. It's revisionist to say they were lucky to get James Harden, because I made the
– Oh, no. They set it up, and he was involved in setting it up, and it was very important, and it was great. Like, that, yeah. Everything happened the way it wanted to happen, but it still took years and years.
Yeah.
And so basically your argument is, if you're pushing against that, is like, do you want to limp into the playoffs for a bunch of years and lose in the first round, or do you want to build for something and be bad, obviously, but like – only have one clear goal and maybe get to the place you want to get to quicker. Like, it took them a long time to get from Yao and McGrady to Dwight and Harden.
Yes, absolutely. It took, I mean, how many years? Five, six?
Somewhere in there. And the Sixers are 2 years in. This is going to be their third year. And if you believe in Jahlil Okafor, if you believe in a healthy Joel Embiid, then maybe we're already like starting that up.
I'll tell you what, I believe in Jahlil Okafor.
I think you do, Spike.
I'll tell you, I have enjoyed the failure of the Lakers in free agency a lot. I've enjoyed the failure of, I think, the Knicks in free agency. I think this is like real proof that, like, I made the point the other day, but it's true, that the Sixers have signed like a top free agent more recently than the Lakers have.
Yeah.
Elton Brand was like the big free agent that year. The last free agent the Lakers signed was Shaquille O'Neal in 1996. That was 20 years ago. And if you want to also like look at the landscape here, Pau Gasol chose to leave the Lakers, and Dwight Howard took less money to leave the Lakers.
Yeah.
So it's funny watching like everyone who said, well, they're going to get LaMarcus Aldridge and Kevin Love. And
everybody will come to L.A. because it's L.A. And I had this unnecessarily heated argument yesterday with my girlfriend, whose name is Alyssa, who's a Lakers fan and born here and everything. And other people that we were with who are Lakers fans found it hard to believe, like, why would people hate the Lakers? Like, they don't get it that, like, they're the villain, they're the enemy. And it's like, well, we're bad. We've been bad for years. And it's like, yeah, but you have a history of being the villain, being the bad guys, like, poaching all the good players from the small market teams and just getting lucky and then assuming people will want to come play for you because you're in LA. And they're like, yeah. And it's like, well, people don't like that.
Yeah.
And they're like, why? Why don't they just become – then move here. Then move to L.A. yourself. And it's like
they do the Yankees rings thing. Like,
exactly.
MA championship. They're horrible. They're Lakers fans are entitled, obnoxious. And let me tell you something. Like, the thing that happens at Sixers games where, like, when there's a Lakers game, three-quarters of the place is, like, full of – you know, purple and gold that are not from Los Angeles. That's everywhere. They're awful. They're a bandwagon team. And I don't think that Lakers fans understand that, like, they watching bandwagon teams fail is, there's so much joy in that. There's so much, because, you know, if you grew up in Los Angeles and you grew up a Laker fan, then fine. Even like the buses are idiots, and like I love it. It's horrible. I think Kobe Bryant has become like a parody of himself. Like, it's embarrassing.
I love Kobe in terms of enjoyment level. I love that he's, when he calls the team Charmin soft and leaves practice, like, that's the best. Like, it's great. But like, they're not going to win a championship or come close as long as Kobe's there. And I really can't wait for the next offseason when Mitch Kupchak's like, all right, Kobe's retiring, everybody. And Kobe's like, well, no, what? Give me, I want to keep playing.
Well,
give me another 2 years.
I bet Kobe Bryant is going to end up playing for a different team. And
And that will be a good decision for the Lakers. It'll be hard and it'll be ugly, but have to do that eventually.
You know who he's going to play for, don't you?
You think Dallas or New York?
No, the Knicks. He's got to play for the Knicks. He's got to go do the triangle.
Oh, my God. That'd be so good.
God, it'll be awesome. All right, quick. Let's get through some things because we're already at 52 minutes. Just a quick nod. I don't even have a comment on it, but the fact that the Sixers had a meeting with Jimmy Butler sort of made me smile. I like
that. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
Talk to everybody, Sam.
Yeah.
Wait, did they actually have the meeting or did it
get... No, it got canceled when the Bulls offered him $95.
Well, listen, they had to talk to his agent's assistant to set that meeting up at least. So that's establishing a dialogue.
Well, and it sort of goes to the, we didn't even have time to talk about this, and I'd rather talk about point guards than talk about this, but the whole we missed the, the Sixers paid the Pelicans $3 million and the Sixers are going to get a bad name around the league and agents don't like them and blah, 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 blah. This is all, I made the point very clearly. People signed with Donald Sterling, who was a known off, he was a racist. I think he called Baron Davis the N-word while he was on the court, I think before when he was on, it is people, LeBron and other players are choosing to play for Dan Gilbert. If you think the fact that the Sixers offer second round picks, 40-year unguaranteed deals, and that they didn't disclose and they deny it, by the way. But
it seems like then what about the Bynum trade? Seems like you take a risk. It wasn't like Drew was never injured before, and it was it's not like if we traded Embiid now and just sort of swept some things under the rug. Obviously, we don't know shit about it, but. It seems like you take that risk when you trade for a player. I don't know.
You know what? Agents are going to take their teams to the Sixers, take their players to the Sixers when the Sixers have better players and money to spend. And they're not going. And all of this noise that you're hearing, unsurprisingly, and I've said this a million times, this noise, reporter noise, comes from agents. How do you think they're getting reports on how these meetings went? With free agents. Who do you think's giving them that information? The team is. Do you think the Lakers are calling LaMarcus Woj and saying, "Whoa, our Aldridge meeting did not go well. You should have seen how foolish Kobe looked." No, it's the agents. This is all the agents. So the agents don't like the Sixers right now because they don't spend any money. This is crazy talk, So point guards, there was high comedy yesterday.
Yeah, I had a really good time.
Yeah, I liked your four point guards that you're moderately interested in for the Sixers to sign. Now, I will say, before we talk about any of this, I think the most likely explanation, the most likely thing is they don't sign any of those guys and they do sign Ish Smith. Honestly, I think that's the most likely situation.
Yeah, but I could see them giving a year or two to Ish Smith at three or two years, $4 million, something like that.
Yeah, I like that. Why not? Yeah. So you brought up Corey Joseph, Jeremy Lin, Patrick Beverley, and
Rondo for fun.
Yeah. Now, and I'm not even going to address your Deron Williams nonsense.
Why not address it, Spike?
Because let me tell you something. You talk about that I occasionally hear things or whatever. When I say that Deron Williams is a toxic locker room guy and does not care, there is no chance of Deron Williams playing on the Sixers.
You talking to Billy King?
No, I'm telling
Billy,
you.
Billy talking?
I am telling you that...
do we not believe in second chances, Spike?
We believe in... No, not with Deron Williams. So let's go over these guys and then let's do a jigsaw and let's get out of here. So Corey Joseph, you've been talking about for a while.
Yeah, Corey Joseph is a guy that just sort of has been relegated to the third guard on the Spurs. I think Patty Mills is probably a little more well thought of over there because of his shooting ability. Patty Mills is who we kind of hope that Isaiah Cannon becomes. But Corey Joseph is a really good defensive point guard. I think he was the kind of guy, how Drew played off the ball at UCLA?
Yep.
He did that at Texas, and so he slipped in the draft, and sort of never got the coming out of college never got the fanfare that he should have gotten because he's a really talented player, so he's a defense first point guard. He runs around. He doesn't shoot threes that much, But I think that he's got a decent shot, and I would love to pair him with Brett Brown and let him like run the offense for a couple of years until we get the guy that we're going to end up planting a point guard for the next decade, which hopefully will be next year in the draft. I like Corey Joseph. He seems like a guy you can get for cheap and then like play in the same way that like Reggie Jackson was like undervalued or playing like backup and then like stepped in and became like, oh, he's Reggie Jackson. Now he gets big money. I think Corey Joseph could be that, and we're getting him a little bit before that maybe blows up. And so if you sign him to like a 4-year, like $25 million deal, I don't think that the Spurs would be able to match. And I think that deal looks really good this year, and especially once the cap goes up. And ultimately, he's like your guy that you just put in and play defense with. Him and Tony Roten would be able to lock up everybody. I like Corey Joseph. I'd like to put him back with Brett Brown and see what happens.
He seems Sixers-y.
Yeah, he seems Sixers-y.
Yeah.
That's really good.
Lin, I've been riding the Lin train for like 2 years now that I want Lin on the Sixers. I think Lin very quickly went from overrated to underrated.
Yeah.
He was in a terrible situation. Look, Jeremy Lin is a I don't even want to talk about bad defensive point guards anymore because like by and large point guards seem bad at defense. 75% of them seem bad at defense.
Yeah.
So he can't guard anybody, but he does when he gets to the rim, like he gets to the rim at like a pretty high level and finishes really well. And you want to talk about a guy that would be great with Nerlens or Embiid, and that guy is Lin. He would be a third guard or even I would not even mind starting him at point. Like he's not a fantastic three-point shooter, but he's a good three-point shooter, and he's clearly not Steph Curry, but he is a guy that can pull up and shoot threes off the dribble. Like,
yeah.
You know, I think Jeremy Lin is really underrated at this point, and I think teams might be scared of him, and I would be totally into like 3 years at 15 or something, or 3 years for 12
yeah,
at Jeremy.
I'd give him less. Probably I'd give him less years. I don't want anybody to like linger longer than they have to because I think that I don't think we signed Jeremy Lin to get better. I'm sure the Sixers probably think he's underrated and maybe could turn him into a point guard that they flip eventually. But at this point, I just want someone that will feed the post and space the floor, feed the post and sort of get out of the way and set up what the eventual point guard will be able to do and give Nerlens and Jahlil a sense of like, this is how it's going to go. You know what I mean? So I don't want someone, I don't think you signed Jeremy Lin to get better. I don't think you're like, he's going to be really good and then we'll be able to do this with him. I think it's just like, we need somebody in there now to be able to, you know, you want Brevin Knight, like you want someone that's just gonna like pass the ball around and get into a place where they're okay with what Brett Brown's offense is going to be, and that's why I'm not looking at any guys for like really long term deals because I don't think any of them are the long term solution. It's a stopgap, and for Lin it'd be a fun stopgap. For Corey Joseph it'd be like a value stopgap, but I think ultimately you want someone that just bridges the gap between you and the future.
Yeah, and remember, a 3-year deal is basically a 2-year deal because the third year is going to be a lockout missed season anyway. So,
do you really think so?
Nah, I think they'll get half a season in. I think it'll be fine.
I'll be so sad.
Yeah, it'll be terrible. It was terrible last time, you know.
Yeah, but at least it was terrible last time with like the Sixers. Well, the Sixers are horrible anyway, so like whatever.
Well,
this is good.
Yeah,
it's going to be like the Sixers are finally starting to roll, and they just get the air sucked out of it because we're like waiting to capitalize on all of the benefits we have.
Well, and then here's the thing: is that like it's a real opportunity. If you really, with all the stupid talk about the lottery and tanking and blah, 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 dude, if you take away caps on individual salary caps and make a hard salary cap on teams, if you want, like, That's what you have to do. That's just it. That changes the dynamic. It allows small market teams to really overpay. Like, you can't mm-hmm. overpay superstars now. That you're not even allowed. Like, if the Bucks wanted to offer LeBron James $60 million in free agency and give him 80% of the cap, they can't do it. They don't have the ability to do it. So it would change, I think, everything. But next one you gave was a spike special in Patrick Beverley.
Yeah, you talk about Pat for a little.
But here's the thing. I think he'd be bad on this team. And, like, only because I think he is – well, he is a perfect point guard. He would be, I think, a great LeBron point guard. I think he's a really good James Harden point guard because I think he's got a nice, tight little dribble. But, like he can bring the ball up if you need him to, but he's much better at defending the other guy's point guard and hitting open threes. Like, he's a pretty good three-point shooter when he's open. But, like, I don't know that they have the – like, unless you're sure that like, Stauskas is probably a better ball handler than we give him credit for, but he's not – and Tony Roten can't – I don't know how – I think he's going to demand too much money. And I don't think he really fits that great.
Yeah, he's not the kind of guy that you're gonna want to that you're like, okay, feed the ball into the post. He's not really a floor general. He's sort of like a point guard by default.
Yeah, I think he's great.
He's small. He's great. He's talented. Yeah. I would love him on defense. And people get mad about like him being a dirty player. I think everyone's a dirty player. Like if you're at that level, like you just mess around and like you go and he's gotten caught for it a couple times. I don't blame. I don't think that I don't condemn him for that.
Yeah, I don't think he's – I think he's probably a little dirtier than most, but not nearly as dirty as people, you know. Like, it just takes two incidents where you're going a little too hard to make it look like you're dirtier than you actually are. He's annoying. Like, that's what he is. He's like – he is ferocious. He is – honestly, if – look, I don't think it will happen, but – any game of a Patrick Beverley, Tony Roten backcourt would make my heart explode. Like, I don't think I can handle it. And you weren't really serious about Rondo. That guy's a disaster.
I'd sign him for a year for fun. Why not? Let him. I like the idea of like where the Sixers are in a position where they can afford to have guys come in and resurrect their careers and put up big numbers. And then go play someplace else. And if you can convince Rondo to play actual basketball for 3 months, then I think maybe I don't know. I might not have been serious. I just think it's funny.
Can we do a jigsaw?
Yeah, let's do a jigsaw.
Well, we're at 67 minutes, so I think we should.
So many things have happened. We didn't even talk about the fact that like Dario Saric almost got traded. It didn't almost happen, but for a while people were like, well, it has to be Saric because otherwise this deal doesn't make any sense. And it wasn't because this deal doesn't make any sense.
I don't know. We can do another podcast later if you want. I'm around. So I have to wrap up this one. So let's do Jigsaw and then maybe we'll do one a little sooner than next week so we can.
Next time the Sixers make a big free agent splash.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. And here's where you remember I'm going to say that there's a jigsaw here and then the listeners are going to hear the noise, but we're not going to hear it.
All right. I'm not going to say it.
All right. So here we go. Here's jigsaw time.
Play.
I will play this game.
Game and play.
I will play this game.
I miss you.
I will play this game.
I'm worried. Play.
I will make sure it's long enough.
And after the game, they were interviewing him, and they said, how does it
feel? All right, here we go. I gotta buy that mixer. I don't know. I think we're going to have a sponsor of the show, actually, that's going to make charitable donations and buy us equipment. So maybe I'll get a mixer so we can actually hear the jigsaw music. All right. I stole this one from Chuck Klosterman, who is my favorite writer of all time, by far. And he has a thing in one of his books where he just gives out like these wild hypothetical questions. And I am rephrasing it, but this is the question. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. You can take a pill, and that pill makes you 20% smarter. You're better at reading comprehension. You're better at logic. You're better at math. You're better at any form of critical thinking. You are 20% smarter than you are now.
Right.
But to everyone else, you appear 10% dumber than you actually are. So it's basically a 30% difference, I think, if you take this, you know, because you are 20% smarter, but you seem 10% dumber than you are now. Do you take this pill?
And there's no way to convince other people that you are smarter.
No, it'd be like a dumb person trying to convince you that he's smart.
Interesting. I guess it's like, what does intelligence mean if no one is there to recognize it?
Yeah, this is like that Jack Black movie where everyone that is a bad person is actually fat and everyone that's a good person is skinny.
Shallow Hal.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other option is just like stay being me and like be okay with me.
Right.
So 10% smarter, appear 20% dumber.
No. 20% smarter, appear 10% dumber, or you just as you are now.
And like, would I be able to use that intelligence to like further my career, but people would still think I'm dumb?
Hey, this is you figuring this
out. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I feel like I'm really, really smart. I think I'm like supremely intelligent. That's not true. I'm pretty much like okay with my intelligence level.
So I feel like I
don't need the pill.
All right, that's fine. I would agree with you actually. I also think I am supremely intelligent.
I feel like if I was smarter, I'm okay. Like, I think if you listen to this podcast, you think I'm like kind of smart, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I was 20% smarter, I would just be like a dick. Like, I feel like I'm not far enough away. I'm close enough to being like a dick already.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you added 20%, I'd just like, my nose would just get progressively upturned and it wouldn't be good for anybody. I don't think I want it.
All right. That's fair. I'm with you. I also think I'm supremely intelligent and wouldn't do it.
Way to go.
With that, that's the end of the Ricky. Please rate us on iTunes and make a donation to that thing on spikeeskin.com with the
original. Yeah, hey, trust the podcast.
Trust the podcast. Who said that? I think
somebody tweeted that at us. I really liked it.
You know who did? Was Dustin Godsey, who used to work for the Wells Fargo Center, now works for the Bucks. Said trust the podcast. So thanks, Dustin, and thanks for listening to the podcast. And my favorite player is Jahlil Okafor. All right.
See you, buddy.
See ya. Love you.
Love you.
Bye.